we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less you eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Canada's only radio show and podcast on compassionate living and environmentalism. This is 100.5 FM, CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, on January 18th, 2019. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
So this show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. On today's show, we will interview two local animal rights activists, Angel Chen, a co-organizer of Anonymous for the Voiceless, which is a grassroots animal rights group, who show undercover footage from slaughterhouses on the streets of Vancouver to the public and attempt to lead them to a vegan lifestyle. Angel also engages in anti-fur activism and environmental awareness campaigns. After that, we'll speak with coordinator for Sea Shepherd, Jess Ammon, on the near extinction of our southern resident orca whales. Stay tuned for those interviews in just a few minutes.
Well, last week, about 60 of us Vancouver animal advocates converged together to disrupt the fur industry as we marched throughout the streets of downtown Vancouver to various high-end stores that sell clothing made from the exploitation and murder of sentient beings who just want to live. We went to stores such as the UGG store on Robson Street, Snowflake Fur on Georgia Street, and Holt Renfrew and Canada Goose in the Pacific Centre Mall. And if you're interested in seeing how that went, you can check out some of our videos at Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook. Now, I just want to say what I took from this march, Jen, was that it was just great to feel empowered with, because I feel that there is power in numbers. And so often we feel like, you know, people are wearing jackets with all this fur trim that's so rampant in Vancouver, and especially where I work at a university. And sometimes when you're just by yourself, it feels like, you know, you can't really get much accomplished, but when you're together in numbers, it's more empowering. And to me, it felt like, wow, you know, we have to really use this voice to get across to people. Mm-hmm. So what I have been trying to do lately is, as I said, I work at the university campus, and I see fur, Canada Goose, all other kinds of real fur, like all the time, mm-hmm. passing by me on campus, at work, at the gym. I have a story to share about just a couple weeks ago. I have a lot of those. You can get Canada Goose leaflets from PETA. Mm-hmm. They'll send them to you for free. And yeah, so one day a few weeks ago, I was going to the gym, and I just had a hunch. I thought, you know, I'm just going to take one leaflet with me in my gym bag and see if I can give it to someone who needs the education. And I went to the gym, and as soon as I turned through the turnstile to get in, there were two young men there wearing the full Canada Goose jacket with the coyote trim. Mm-hmm. And I thought, perfect, this was meant to be. And I was rushing to get to my spinning class, so I didn't really have time to talk. But this, what I feel like, this is better than nothing. It's planting seeds. One of the young boys, he passed over his jacket to the other person to put in the locker room. And so he was still there as I passed by him. And I said to him, excuse me, can I give you this? It's about your jacket. Mm-hmm. So that interested him. He took the leaflet. Mm-hmm. And then to my surprise, he started to read it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, he's actually reading it, because mm-hmm. it's relevant to him, right? Yeah. He wants to know maybe about his really expensive jacket. Mm-hmm. But I was in a rush. I said, and seeing that he was reading it, I said, if you want to speak to me about it after, I'll be in the spinning room.
Yeah.
Didn't hear from him again. I don't remember what he looks like, but it was at least something.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that. And you're at least planting a seed. If somebody's going to be defensive about it, they now know, right?
Yes. And I've also started something that I like to call bike activism, which is riding my bike on campus. And the other day, I rode my bike really quickly on a hill past this person wearing the full Canada Goose. I did not have time to stop with her to talk. I was getting to work. And I just said, that fur is disgusting, right at her, and kept going. Good. I'm going to keep at it.
Yeah, I like shaming when it comes to fur because I think people know. I think they know better. And I want it to be a situation where they go, oh, every time I wear this, something like that happens and it's uncomfortable.
Me too.
So I'm not going to wear it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, fur seems to be a growing trend in Vancouver, don't you think?
Every year, more and more. And when I go downtown Vancouver sometimes, I actually wind up in tears and I have to go home. I just can't stand seeing it. And knowing that in this age where environmentalism and animal rights are so interconnected and so important, that people are sort of going in the opposite direction morally, and it leaves me feeling hopeless.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I hope that the following interviews, especially with Angel, will give hope.
Yes, this is a really inspiring one.
She's doing some great work. We'll get to that right now.
Okay.
Today we are speaking with one of my all-time favorite activists, Angel Chen, 20-year-old UBC attendee. Welcome to the show, Angel.
Thank you, Jen, for having me.
So you and I have known each other a couple years, and what I love about you is your enthusiasm that is just so unwavering, even though we have a lot of negative experiences as activists. You just go right up to people with a smile on your face and you educate them about how cruel the fur is on their jacket, for example. And you'll do it anywhere. You'll do it on a bus.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I will.
Tell us about your journey to veganism and activism.
So I've been vegan for about 2 years and 8 months now. So I turned vegan when I learned about animal agriculture's effect on the environment. And then I was introduced to activism through the Vancouver Chicken Save. But at the same time, I was living in England for school. And I attended Anonymous for the Voiceless Cube of Truth in London for the first time there. And that's when I got addicted to how empowering it feels to be a part of a community of people who are fighting for animal rights. So when I moved back home about a year, almost 2 years ago now, I joined more activism events in Vancouver. So that's how I got started in activism.
And so for our listeners that don't know what the Cube of Truth is, which is an event put on by the group Anonymous for the Voiceless, do you want to explain that since you're now a key organizer of the Vancouver chapter?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Anonymous for the Voiceless is an animal rights organization that's operating in more than almost 1,000 cities in the world. So they specialize in street activism and public outreach. So there's two components. The first component is the Cube of Truth itself, which is a cube of people standing in a square holding laptops or TVs showing slaughterhouse footage, so common practice within the industry. So that gets the public's attention. When they walk by, they see what's happening, and out of their own curiosity, people will stop and watch. And then there's the outreach team, which are volunteers dedicated to explaining to people who stop what is happening on the screen and answering any questions they might have about the industry and about what they can do to stop it. So that would be to go vegan, why we should go vegan and how. So it's a very, very effective form of activism that I really love participating in, and I am now an organizer for Vancouver with Chris. So yeah, that's a big part of my activism here.
And a lot of people have agreed to go vegan on the spot within a conversation that just lasts a few minutes, and they otherwise may never have seen this kind of footage before because it's not readily available unless you search for it, right?
That's right, yeah. So the industry definitely is not interested in showing people this footage, because if everyone saw it, nobody would be purchasing animal products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the listeners who've heard our show before, they're going to be tired of me saying this, but I'm just saying it for anyone who's tuning in for the first time. I was one of those people that spent probably twice the money on my animal products, believing that they came from a more humane situation because of the advertising and marketing. I didn't think they'd be allowed to lie, and I later found out that was not true. And a lot of the footage that we see in the videos that you show with Anonymous for the Voiceless, you would think would be illegal, but it's standard legal practice, and in some cases, it's even considered certified humane by the SPCA.
Yeah, that's right, and also certified free range, organic, and local.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what really shocks people when we tell them that.
Yeah.
And all along, they've thought it's okay that they're eating animal products because they thought it was fine that it was organic, free range, all of these terms that actually exist just to make you feel better about the product, but actually means nothing for the welfare of the animal.
Right, and they all end up in the same slaughterhouses, and the day for them is just an absolute nightmare.
Exactly.
Well, you and I do quite a bit of animal rights activism together, and you really stand out. I mean, there's a lot of amazing activists, but what surprises me about you is for the amount of time you've been doing this and the frequency with which you go up to people and have these conversations, especially people who are wearing fur, which I find kind of different than people who are eating animal products. I feel like with the animal products, maybe not everybody knows yet that we don't need their bodies for sustenance or their secretions for sustenance. But when it comes to fur, it's a bit of a different matter because you could easily wear something else. You know it's cruel. And you still do it with a smile and positivity and expecting that somebody is really going to come around to what you're thinking. And when you get the message on their face that you're embarrassing them on a bus or that they don't want to hear it, you keep smiling and you keep talking, knowing that people who are eavesdropping are at least getting the message as well. And I love that. Can you describe one of those situations?
Yeah, so the reason I try to talk to everyone I encounter wearing fur is because of a quote that Earthling Ed said at the official animal rights march in London. He said something along the lines of, for every second, for every moment that we get to be alive, we have to speak up for the animals who don't get to have that voice. So that really inspired me to talk about it every second or chance that I get. So, like you said, I go to UBC, and that's where I see a lot of fur and especially Canada Goose jackets everywhere. So I usually just approach them and say, hey, how's it going? And then, introduce myself, and I ask them whether they knew about where the materials on their coat came from and how it was sourced. 99% of the time they say, I don't know, or, oh, it's fake, isn't it? Some people actually think it's not real, even though they paid over $1,000 for such a jacket, which I find very surprising. But anyway, so yeah, lots of consumers are unaware of what they're actually buying and what they're contributing to. So I tell them a few facts about wild coyotes being trapped and how lots of times their mothers, trying to get back to their starving pups, and, the process that they are skinned for their fur, and, as well as the down feathers in the jacket, that's also, it's live plucked, and the ducks and geese suffer immensely for that as well, so that's the cost of down.
Mm-hmm.
And, I usually get pretty positive reactions. People like to apologize to me. They say they're sorry, they didn't know. So I offer a few things that they could do. They could either zip off the fur so that they're not normalizing wearing fur and they're not promoting this fashion statement, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also cover up the logo so they're not promoting the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask them to tell all their friends, and usually they say, yeah, I have a friend or family who's interested in buying, so now that I know this, I will tell them to not do it, which is good. But yeah, I find it it's kind of limiting conversation because they already have the jacket. So
yeah.
But education is key, I think. They deserve to know what they have and what they bought.
And even though they have the jacket, you never know. This might come up in conversations with multiple groups of friends for them, and then the word gets out, right?
That's right, yeah.
Now, you have a funny story about approaching a man wearing a Canada Goose jacket in one of Vancouver's most popular vegan restaurants. Tell us that story.
Yeah, so it was after a Cube of Truth. The activists usually go out to eat afterwards. We were at Meat in Yelltown, and a guy walks in with his friend and his wife, I think. He was wearing the full Canada Goose with the full fur trim, very obvious, very recognizable. So I just thought, you know, this is a vegan restaurant. Let me go talk to him very nicely. So I approach him. I start the conversation, and he stops me before I could really get into the details. And he says, look, I know where you're going with this, but I'm here with my friends and my wife, so I'd really appreciate it if we didn't have this conversation. So that's how he definitely knew where I was going, which is kind of good because he was aware of what I was about to say, and you know, he was probably guilty and felt a little bit ashamed of wearing that. So he actually took off the jacket. And he looked back on the table. We were a table of 20 or 30 of us, a big table. And he's like, oh, sorry. So, yeah. You know, waved to everyone. And we were like, yeah.
I wonder if he even knew he was in a vegan restaurant.
Yeah, right.
And what were the faces like on his friends or family that was with him?
I think they just really wanted to avoid talking about it, and they probably knew the content of the discussion, how that would go. So,
well, you know, there are some vegan restaurants in the world that say no fur on their front doors.
Yeah, we are actually trying to get a lot of restaurants in Vancouver to have a sticker outside the door that says that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that goes well.
Mm-hmm. However, there's a side of me that feels we should let these people come into the vegan restaurants, learn to love vegan food, and even if they're only eating the vegan food because it's trendy or they've heard it's a good restaurant, it's saving animals.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel that we should be inclusive for, you know, to everyone and allow anyone to go into the restaurants. Perhaps a sign that says, you know, maybe leave the coat on a special, in a closet.
That's a great idea.
The fur isn't, you know, for everyone to see.
Well, it's traumatizing to people who are eating there that are animal rights activists, and they just want a break from what they're seeing day to day. I mean, we really do have these images running through our head all day that are traumatizing, and the last thing you want while you're trying to enjoy yourself is to witness that.
Yeah, I know it traumatizes me for sure. Mm-hmm. So,
and so you are living a close to zero waste lifestyle or zero waste lifestyle right now?
Yeah, I started that January 1st last year, so it's been a little over a year. But it's only in this recent 2 or 3 months that I've really cut down on pretty much everything, you know, packaging wise. So I'd say I'm close to or zero waste.
And so there's some really obvious things about being zero waste, such as bringing your own lunch somewhere in Tupperware or bringing your own coffee cup, which we all can figure out for ourselves. But there's other things that maybe we don't think about. And so in the couple of weeks I've spent in the lead up to my interview with you, I've been mentally aware of everything I've done that has been a situation where I ended up thinking, what would Angel do here? So I'll give you some examples. I was in a restaurant yesterday and there were paper napkins.
Right.
I was eating something very messy. I used them. I thought, would Angel bring her own napkin to a restaurant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do try to, and I always have one in my backpack, especially if I'm traveling on a road trip or something. Definitely bringing a towel or a napkin is very handy because you can wash that, you can reuse it again, whereas a paper napkin, although it's compostable, is still one use, and it's meant to be thrown away after one or two uses. So,
and then when they put down the water glass on a coaster, I've always stopped them for years because they're going to wipe the table when I leave, and the ring is not going to stain the table, the ring of water from the condensation. There's no need for coasters, and I know it's one coaster, but why have these stacks and stacks of them thrown out by restaurants every day if you think about the impact of that, right?
Yeah. Do you mean coasters that are disposable?
Yeah, the ones that they put your beer on, for example, to catch the condensation. And then another thing I thought about, which also doesn't seem like a big deal in isolation, but the till tape that gets used that can't be recycled because it's carbon fiber paper, whatever they call it, thermopaper. You never really need your bill printed in a restaurant unless it's going to be a tax write-off. So you could ask them not to print it and just put your credit card through, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think it never hurts to ask and have that, you know, 2 or 3 sentence conversation with your server, who would probably most likely be very understandable and accommodate to you asking to not have it printed. So it's, yeah, very important to speak up.
And when I go to get a coffee, I bring my own mug, yet they still write down my order on a thick cardboard coffee sleeve. And this happens in times when there's no one in the coffee shop, and all they're going to do is pass that to the person who's standing 3 feet away from them instead of verbally saying she wants an espresso. And that person standing there, you could easily just say it. And so it's this habit that customer service people tend to get into. So I think what you have to do is say to people before you even make your order, I'm zero waste. So please don't write this on a piece of paper or anything, right?
Yeah, I think it's very important to remember to be on top of it and anticipate what might likely happen with the person who is serving you. Never hurts to have that conversation.
And so another example that you and I were talking about before we started our interview today was I recently was at the doctor for a lesion on the skin in my face, and I was concerned it might be skin cancer, and I wanted the doctor to feel it, and he immediately put on rubber gloves, which would have prevented him from feeling it anyways, and it was a waste of rubber and lots of waste in a doctor's office. And on top of that, he wanted me to sit on the table that has the paper over it, and every time I go to the doctor, they want you to sit on that paper, which then gets torn off and thrown away. And just think of the expense as well for the doctors, for all that unnecessary, where you don't have to be in a sanitary situation, right?
Yeah, you could just sit on the chair
so
next to it.
Last week when I went, I saw a different doctor, and I was just there for a prescription. So she pointed to the table and asked me to sit down, and I said, I'm zero waste, so I'm going to ask that you don't ask me to sit there and that you don't put on exam gloves because I'm just going to ask you for a prescription. And she looked at me like she had no idea what I was talking about, and I just kind of elaborated, and she was kind of – you could tell she was kind of thinking – can we get on with it here, please? But, you know, I was wondering, does Angel have to preempt every conversation with someone with, just so you know, I'm zero waste, before you go ahead and take my order or whatever it is?
I've actually never said that to anyone that isn't my friend or anything.
Okay.
Because I kind of assume that they're not really sure what that means. No. Or, I mean, it's pretty obvious what that means, but
yeah.
I just am very firm and clear about what I want. Let's say you're bringing your cup, so, you know, don't write the order on a sleeve, a cardboard sleeve.
Yeah.
Please just, you know, prevent that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so...
But sometimes you have to repeat it, too.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a day in the life of Angel in circumstances where it's not quite so obvious, like bringing your own coffee cup and bringing your food from home. What kinds of things have you encountered where you can offer tips?
Well, there's one that I think comes up quite a bit is if you are purchasing pastries or bread from a bakery. So bread, even if it's fresh, usually comes in a plastic bag and then with the... a seal on it, right? So that's technically the best way to keep it for longest. But what I do is I bring a large cloth bag or my own reusable bag and ask them to slice the bread and then put the bread directly in the bag that I've brought. And then when I get home, I put it in a tin and it keeps just as well as if it was in a plastic bag. So that's a really great way of storing bread and also getting pastries and stuff from the bakery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few stores around town that are either zero waste or you can at least bring your own container. I mean, there's lots of stores that will do this. There's some that are more used to people like us coming in anyway, right?
Yeah. So the soap dispensary is a great one for lots of bulk items and things that you might not find elsewhere, like tofu and plant-based meats and cheeses, as well as shampoos, everything else. And then I really love that store for pretty much a one-stop shop for everything you might want.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also Other ones that comes to mind is Eternal Abundance, which is zero waste and vegan. It's a cafe and also a grocery, so they have lots of food items as well. And I think they do sell the cloth bags, which is, yeah, it's really great to support that business.
Mm-hmm. And they're all organic, and they have a lot of very interesting ground-up kind of spices and powders that do amazing things for your body, things I've never heard of that have really interesting health benefits. And they come in these jars that you pay a dollar deposit on, and you can bring the jar back and have it filled with something else. And most of their products are actually fair trade as well.
Yeah, that's a really great thing about them. And they have very yummy food as well.
Super healthy, yeah. So what else, Angel? What do you want the world to know? What do you see in your daily life that you think could be so easily fixed when it comes to waste?
Another one I thought of is my toothbrush. So most of us are using toothbrushes that are plastic, and we don't think twice when we, you know, change them every few months that actually that toothbrush will stay on the earth forever because it's made of plastic and likely will never decompose in a landfill, or it might end up in the natural environment like the ocean. So we can switch to bamboo toothbrushes that are also available at the Soap Dispensary, Nada, lots of places sell them now. And yeah, so that's made of, the handle's made of wood, and then it's compostable at the end of its life. So we can switch that. It's a very easy fix.
And I would imagine that you're saving a ton of money because there's certain things you're just saying no to. You're not buying a lot of new things because you could buy it secondhand.
That's right, yeah. So clothing, Tasha Lobsinger is really inspired me on learning about the textiles industry and how damaging that is. So do you know about fast fashion, which is, you know, also very dangerous, where people are getting a new outfit for every event they go to, or just constantly buying new clothes, new textiles. So there are lots of thrift stores and secondhand stores in Vancouver and all over where you can find pretty much anything you're looking for at really great deals and in really great condition as well. So there's really no need to buy any more new things. And I think we can all agree that none of us really need to get too much of anything new in terms of clothes. And
I want to take this opportunity to encourage people to watch a documentary called The True Cost on Netflix.
That's a great one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of knew all that, but the other things that it went into that maybe everybody doesn't think about is these rivers that are dyed, the colors of the dye that have been dyeing the fabric, and then the poor people in those areas who are drinking and bathing in those rivers. And it's that's something that we just don't think about. But of course, this is where a lot of clothing is made in poorer nations. And, you know, they're suffering because of us and fast fashion, especially. It's just so heartbreaking.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The environmental damage is very significant, as well as the human impact, which I didn't think about too much before I got into researching more about it, learning about it, and also watching The True Cost, which really brings it to light.
Well, while we're on the topic of documentaries, and just before we wrap up, Angel, tell me some of your most highly recommended documentaries for living the lifestyle that you and I live.
So the one that really inspired me was Cowspiracy, because it highlights the effect of animal agriculture on the environment. So that's really great. It's on Netflix. And then What the Health is good if you are, you know, concerned or curious about health and what eating animal products are doing to that. And then I really liked Land of Hope and Glory, which is made by Earthling Ed or Ed Winters. It's about animal agriculture in the UK specifically, but what I like about it is that it's showing farms from all over the UK, and it's showing standard practice. So when you watch it, you think, oh no, this must be an isolated case, but then you realize actually this is happening across all the areas, and how common and how regular it is, and on the scale at which it's happening. So it's very eye-opening. Earthlings, Dominion is very similar as well. There's one film I watched recently. It's called Running for Good, which was super, I was very impressed by the woman in the film. So I highly encourage that as well.
We had her on the show about a month ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing. Fiona Oaks is so inspiring. In fact, she's inspired me to run my first half marathon in May.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of athletes, we're all really anticipating the latest documentary, which is called The Game Changers.
Yes.
Don't know when that's coming out. It was supposed to be out in October. There's some kind of delay, but it literally is going to be a very big game changer because it focuses on athletes.
Yeah, I think it will definitely debunk a lot of myths that people buy into, like, you know, vegans don't get enough protein, they can't be strong, they can't be world-class athletes, but in fact they can, and there are lots of them.
Yeah. Okay, so before we wrap up, let's give people an opportunity to get involved in your ongoing outreach that you do, even if they're not vegan yet, even if they've never done activism before. Everybody's welcome to come to the Anonymous for the Voiceless events. And where can people follow you for that?
A really great way to find out about events is to join the AV Vancouver page, or if you're in another city, then AV and then the city that you're in.
Yeah.
And then, so you'd have to answer 3 questions, very simple, and once we confirm that you're in the group and you get to find out exactly where events are happening and when. We have them about twice a month in Vancouver, sometimes more often in the warmer months. So we have one coming up this week on Friday, the 18th, at Robson Square downtown, and it's at 6:30.
Oh, and speaking of downtown, I completely forgot to talk about what happened on the weekend. We did a massive fur demo that took place at various locations. Go ahead, let's hear about that.
So, yeah, that was organized by Daphna from DXE Vancouver, and it was such an amazing event. I think there were about 60 to 70 activists. We all came together, and we had a light brigade that spelled out Canada Goose Kills, and then we had people handing out leaflets, educating the public on the cause. And then what we did was we marched all around downtown Vancouver. We stopped at Snowflake, which is a store that sells fur and lots of, you know, hats, jackets, and things like that. And then we finally went to Pacific Center to protest outside of the store. I think it was pretty interesting because they had the security and the mall management had all the doors locked or, you know, had security to prevent us from going in, as I'm sure they knew it was happening and they were anticipating us. But we managed to get in anyway. And, yeah, there were amazing speakouts. I did one outside the store itself. And lots of people were gathering around just watching what's happening. And we were very loud. So it was very easy to see I really love that because it just exposes the truth to people who might otherwise not know about Canada Goose, might not otherwise know the cruelty behind that brand.
Yeah, it was a really powerful demo. I loved that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, Angel, I'm sure I will see you very soon at the next animal rights demonstration, and I really hope that your enthusiasm never fades.
Thanks.
Okay, love you so much.
You taught me so much.
Oh, you sweetheart. Okay, we're really glad to have you as part of the team.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, well, see you soon. Thanks for being on.
See you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. Today we're speaking with Jess Ammon, coordinator with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's Vancouver chapter, who's also formerly volunteered with Sea Shepherd New Zealand. Welcome, Jess.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks for being on today.
No problem.
So it seems to be in the daily news lately, the issue of our southern resident orcas. So for people that aren't following this whole issue, can you bring us up to speed on who they are, where they reside, how they're classified and tracked, etc.?
Yeah, for sure. So our southern resident orcas, they're one of four resident populations here in the northwest of the North American Pacific Ocean. So these southern resident orcas, they live around the coast of Washington, British Columbia, mainly through the Salish Sea. We've currently only got 75 of them left. It's just gone up by one after a recent birth, which is really amazing. We just need to make sure that we can do everything we can to help this calf make it through these first difficult years. Mm-hmm. With the resident orcas, we've got three pods that live here. They're labeled J, K, and L pod. L pod being the biggest, which is the one with the new baby. These orcas, they're like a big extended family. And maybe you saw after the birth of this calf, the three pods came together to celebrate. At least that's what I like to think they were doing.
So
some of these individuals, they're tagged and they get tracked by satellite technology to follow their movements. It's mostly during the winter months when we know less about their behavior. There's a few research organizations around that follow all of this really closely and are constantly reporting on any changes, illnesses. You know, at the moment, there's a couple of orca that they believe are really struggling from lack of nutrition right now, and they're not really sure if they're actually going to make it through to the summer.
And so let's talk about the threats against them. So you mentioned the lack of nutrition, and of course we know there's a human element to all threats against species. So let's talk about what everybody should be concerned about right now and what is threatening them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at the moment, the biggest problem with them being, with their numbers being so low, it's the lowest that it's been in over 30 years. They've been having trouble birthing for a long time. And, you know, this number might be slightly off with the recent birth that they've had, but around 90% of their pregnancies have been resulting in miscarriages and stillbirths over the last few years. They're basically starving from a lack of food. And they're the only orca population that's actually listed on the Endangered Species Act. So there's a few big things that are really affecting them. There's pollution, you know, plastics. Noise is a really big one, since orcas use echolocation to detect their prey and navigate. Mm-hmm. And if there's too much noise, they're unable to use their sonar effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest issues, which is one that we've worked really closely on, and the government in Canada is choosing to ignore, is this threat from salmon farms. So when we brought salmon farms here from, we imported the salmon from Norway, mm-hmm. we also introduced a virus called Piscine Reovirus. It's a super tough and durable little virus. Basically, it causes the red blood cells to burst in salmon, and it causes their organ failure. And so for salmon, this is huge, as it'll either kill them or it makes them way too weak where they can't swim upstream and spawn. Because salmon farms are in these net pens, any diseased fish inside the pens are not picked off by predators, so it just keeps on spreading within the farm and then out onto wild salmon through the waterways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so our campaign, Operation Virus Hunter, we finished our third summer last year in BC researching Piscine Reovirus, and it was found in 80% of salmon farms.
Wow.
These farms are located in the pathway of where wild salmon travel, and it's spreading out into the wild salmon and killing them off. Mm-hmm. And because of this virus and other sea lice, which are also super prevalent in these salmon farms, if the wild salmon do manage to spawn, the baby salmon that do make it out of the rivers are so small and they're just riddled with the sea lice that they end up getting picked off by predators and often don't get a chance to make it to adulthood.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, Chinook salmon, it's the main food source for these orcas, and as well as a load of other species, birds, bears, trees. You know, they spread nutrients up the rivers to help the trees grow. This is a keystone species, and we don't want to find out what will happen if we let them disappear.
Well, a lot of people who are not vegan proudly make the decision to buy wild salmon, and we need to let everyone know that the answer is really veganism when it comes to the environmental and animal rights issues that you and I are talking about today and that we always talk about on Animal Voices here. So can you explain why, you know, people purchasing wild salmon is not ideal? It's not the solution. It's avoiding salmon altogether is what we want, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it comes down to a really obvious thing, and it's just we need to stop eating their food. You know, all these people are saying to stop buying farmed salmon so that we're no longer supporting this industry that's killing wild salmon, which is, you know, is true. But however, if we are shifting the demand that way onto eating wild salmon, then how is that really going to help the problem? You know, the orcas need all the wild salmon that they can get. Mm-hmm. We have to stop eating salmon. Period.
Yeah, it's the majority of their diet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, veganism is something that can really, we really need to take it seriously when we talk about ocean conservation. You know, 30 to 40% of all fish taken from the ocean are used for animal agriculture. Chickens and pigs are eating more fish than humans, and you know, at the rate that we're going, our oceans are going to collapse in our lifetimes. You know, 2048 is what's been predicted by scientists. And the ocean is just such a complex ecosystem, and we get so much of our oxygen from phytoplankton. The effects of this are just going to be so severe.
Well, environmental groups have long suggested removal of four dams on the Lower Snake River, which are a major obstacle to salmon reaching and leaving spawning habitat of Idaho's Wild Salmon River. What are your thoughts on this idea of removing the dams, and what is Sea Shepherd's stance on that?
Yeah, so the idea behind this is that basically if they increase the water flow from the upper river dam, remove the lower dams, it'll create a much more natural river flow and help the reproduction of salmon. So I think this is a really important piece in this big complex puzzle, and you know, thus as Sea Shepherd supports the removal of these dams as well. And we really need to be doing everything we can to bring salmon populations back to a healthy level. There's a lot of talk out there about how this will not help because the salmon are still going to face other obstacles like fishing and pollution, natural predators. I'm just always very skeptical of anything that's said by a party that has something to, you know, gain or lose financially from a situation. There's obviously some big costs involved in removing these dams, but if we decide that it's worth it, which obviously I think it is because we don't want to lose another species because of financial gain like this, you know, if we do lose our orcas, our tourism industry is going to take a huge financial hit as well. So basically, I think if we can give salmon the most natural environment possible, we might see their numbers increase again. And the salmon farms need to move urgently. You know, no more phase out plans. We need to get them out of the water completely, not be pumping any water waste back into the ocean as that's still going to be contaminated. These lower Snake River dams will provide two more salmon runs for them if we can get them breached, which is more opportunity to spawn. And really, we just need to be doing everything we can to help the orcas right now.
Well, how can our listeners help? Besides going vegan, which we've mentioned, and we mention every show.
So, I mean, other things that you can do, we really need to keep the pressure on the governments. You know, write to your local parliament. Jonathan Wilkinson in North Vancouver, he's the Minister of Fisheries and Oceans. We're going to be organizing some protests with Sea Shepherd and some First Nation organizations as well, outside his office in the near future. So keep an eye out for those. They'll be posted on the Vancouver Sea Shepherd Facebook page. We need to basically make sure that BC does not renew their salmon farm tenures. you know, we've had an amazing win recently thanks to a few First Nations who have been putting the pressure on these fish farms. They've been engaging in talks with the province of British Columbia over the last year. You know, they occupied fish farms for, I think it was 280 days. And now Glacier Falls, it's the first fish farm that's had all of the fish removed. And there's quite a few more to come. But most importantly, from all of that, First Nations now have the right to test the fish farms themselves before the fish actually go into the water. So this is just one area in BC right now, but now all the First Nations know that it is possible to get these farms out and to make sure that diseased fish are not going back into their waters. So we're really hoping to see more of the First Nations take back the control now that we know that this is possible.
Well, thank you. So where can our listeners find out more if they want to get involved with Sea Shepherd's Vancouver chapter?
Yeah, so if anyone's interested in volunteering with us, you can go to seashepherd.org, follow the links to volunteer. You can volunteer just onshore, which is what I do. There's also, you know, boats that you can go out on campaign with if that's what you want to do. We've got a Facebook page, which is the Vancouver Sea Shepherd Vancouver and Unceded Coast Salish Territories. So if you want any more information, we post all of our events and everything there. You can always just come along to events and check it out before actually signing up as well.
Okay, thanks so much for being on the show today, Jess.
No problem.
We'll
thanks
talk
for
to you.
The support.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
And now we have some events coming up. So in light of that interview we just had, if you want to learn more, come on up to Squamish next Friday night. I'll be there. Discover the inspiring story of two young Canadians traveling the coast to try and save an iconic species, the orcas we just discussed. So learn more about what resident orcas tell us about the future of Salish Sea and get motivated to activate your interest in conservation in the outdoors. There will be a film screening. It starts at 6 o'clock sharp and it will be at the Brackendale Art Gallery. And there will also be some alcohol served and some snacks. You can get your tickets online. It is suggested that you reserve ahead of time. It is a small space. We have that information on our Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page for you, or you can check out the Sea Shepherd Coast Salish Territories Facebook page as well. And the film is going to be called Coextinction. Also, next Friday, Cube of Truth Vancouver, which we just talked about with Angel in our previous interview. This is put on by Anonymous for the Voiceless. Allison, you and I have taken part in this before.
Yes, Angel was saying it's tonight. Is that the one you're announcing?
Oh, today is Friday the 18th. Sorry, I'm not paying attention.
6 or 6:30 p.m. Yeah.
So if you were inspired by Angel's interview, come on out tonight. It's going to be at Vancouver City Centre Station, 6:30 to 9:30. And if you're not familiar with this kind of thing and you're not quite comfortable, that's okay. Just stand by and watch. You learn so much from watching the activists have their conversations. And you might even see some people go vegan right on the spot. It's actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's at the corner of Granville in Georgia. And Angel asks that you get there on time as there will be a briefing for everyone at 6:30 p.m. You won't want to miss that. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Are you going to go?
Nope.
Okay. This Saturday, there is a sanctuary work day and potluck at Little Oink Bank Pig Sanctuary in Alder Grove from 10 to 2. You can find information on that on our Facebook page as well, Animal Voices Vancouver. Anybody's welcome to come. And especially if you're not vegan, please come and get to see the other side of animals, and maybe this will be your turning point. And we have some news. So a recent news release by Sea Shepherd Coast Salish Territories reads, last weekend, we discovered this open water research center near Port Moody in Vancouver, which is run and funded by, or near Vancouver, which is funded by UBC and the Vancouver Aquarium. They have four captive Steller sea lions in this facility with very small cages, approximately 8 by 10 feet and just 12 feet deep, containing two sea lions in each tiny enclosure. They are conducting research on why Western Alaskan sea lion populations are declining, and Sea Shepherd seeks to understand what relevant information they could possibly be getting from captive local sea lions who've been in captivity their entire lives, and is it worth this cruelty? Sea Shepherd volunteers spoke with one of the researchers on site and found out the following. These sea lions were captured as pups from the wild locally near Vancouver. They are harnessed with GPS and taken out for swims in the inlet. Two of the sea lions are 18 years old and the other two are 21. Again, captured as pups and locked in these cages for most of their lives. They've never known freedom. Sea Shepherd volunteers were not allowed to take any photos of the sea lions in their cages, but did so anyway. And you can see the images on their Facebook page, Sea Shepherd Coast Salish Territories. We do encourage that you send a politely worded email to the aquarium questioning this, if this is how you're feeling about the situation, as we are here. We don't believe that this is necessary or productive. Yeah, so back in the 1970s, sea lions were culled, which resulted in dangerously low population, and this coincided with a steep decline in transient orcas. Currently, the BC government is considering another cull proposed by the Pacific Pinniped Society, who are commercial fisher people with financial interests, selling this under the guise of restoring Chinook salmon populations in order to help the southern resident orcas. However, Chinook salmon only make up about 4% of the diet of sea lions and seals, so we need to question this reasoning. Always dig deeper, right?
Yes, thanks for bringing this to light.
Yeah.
It's educational.
So I have some good news. It's a bit welfareist, though. This week, Hilton Hotels unveiled its first vegan suite inside the Bankside location in London. I say this is welfareist because Hilton Hotels keeps captive dolphins in their Oahu hotel. So this is one step in the right direction, but they are not humane as a hotel chain, and I would encourage boycotting them. Anyway, on just a little bit of information on that vegan suite, though, the Hilton Bankside Hotel consulted with the Vegan Society to create a suite which features a host of cruelty-free amenities. Guests can choose from a pillow menu that features goose down-free pillows, a option stuffed with memory foam, buckwheat husks, millet husks, kapok tree
We
pot.
Had those options when we stayed at the Hilton, remember?
We were there.
I asked you which pillow do you want?
Because they had asking me that.
Yeah, there was a checklist of all different kinds of pillows you could have.
Allison's talking about the Animal Rights National Conference we attended in Virginia and DC.
After that,
So the furniture, upholstery, and key card are made from Pinatex, which is a pineapple-derived leather material. The flooring is made from sustainable bamboo and topped with an ethically sourced organic cotton. The rugs are vegan. There's no wool. What else? The desk features stationery printed with animal-free ink. A lot of people don't know that ink is not always vegan. Mm. And the room service menu features juices, breakfast muesli, potato hash, heartier dishes.
That sounds encouraging.
I think we should send them an email and thank them, but also mention that we don't appreciate them keeping dolphins captive in other resorts for human entertainment.
There's always more that they can do, and it sounds like at least they're taking a step and they're noticing what consumers want.
Yep. Yeah, but I still think an email is useful.
Absolutely.
I always email hotels when I'm there in Hawaii, and I speak with the managers as well in person when I witness animal exploitation. Do we have time for some more news stories here?
We sure do.
This is a really interesting one. Musician and vegan activist Moby announced his candidacy for president of the United States this week. He said, "I've been thinking about it for 5 minutes or so, and I've decided to run for president."
Nice.
Moby began the announcement on Instagram and asked his fans to keep several factors in mind about his announcement, stating, "I am completely unqualified, but that didn't stop Trump or George W. Bush.
Yeah.
I won't campaign or raise money. I absolutely do not think I should be president." Moby urged voters to consider a number of issues at the poll, such as government subsidies for industries that poison people, listing tobacco, animal agriculture, and oil production, despite the trillions of dollars Americans spend on healthcare as a result. The vegan activist also tasked fans to start critical discussions about why the U.S. continues to engage in colonialism, asking why is Puerto Rico not a state, and anti-democratic systems such as the Electoral College. Moby used his announcement as a platform to encourage fans to vote for a candidate that is not himself, but someone that he hopes would be more qualified for the position than Trump. And then he says, "But sure, I'll run for president as long as I don't have to campaign and as long as no one votes for me. Also, your vote matters, so please don't waste your vote on celebrities or third-party candidates." So it's really a publicity stunt with a really good intention behind it, and I think that's great. Moby is a really well-known vegan activist.
Yes, and I read his autobiography last year called Porcelain, which is the same name of the piece by him that we play every Friday on our event segment, such as just now. And this makes me want to have him on the show now. I've been waiting for an opportunity to have him to speak about his vegan activism. He's amazing. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on next week's show on Friday, January the 25th. We'll be continuing with the theme of Veganuary for this last show of the month and featuring cookbook author and vegan educator JL Fields on the show to speak speak about her new book entitled Vegan Food Prep, Ready-to-Go Meals and Snacks for Healthy Plant-Based Eating. I've been reading this book and I'm so looking forward to trying out some of the recipes in it this weekend. We'll also be joined with local vegan advocate Nancy Kellen, who heads up the group Vancouver Meatless Meetup. Vancouver was just named as the city in the world with the fourth most interest in veganism. I don't know how they calculated that, but still very interesting. We'll be chatting with her about that and the growing interest and options in Vancouver for plant-based eating. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream or download the shows as podcasts. You can also read our show blog there with detailed links. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes. And now, as of a few weeks ago, we're on Google Podcasts as well. Stay in touch with us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And you can also send your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email info@animalvoices.org. To end the show today, we'll be playing a mix of Canadian vocalist Chantal Kraviazuk's song Child of the Water, with also music from the Sharkwater film soundtrack by Jeff Rona. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Let the tears we cry, we fill the sea of love. Let the one